This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Seattle Mariners win 6-2 in Anaheim, taking on the Los Angeles Angels. Yay! Jared Kelnick strikes out three times. Oh. The Mariners back at 500 in spite this rash of injuries.
Yay!
You're still wondering about what the best place for their top prospect that's come up so far, Kelnick, is. And maybe that more than anything speaks to sort of the divided focus of your care about the results from this season. We're not at the point of the rebuild where, hey, what happens at the major league level doesn't matter. You're not the Baltimore Orioles.
No.
You've got players that you are counting on and can believe in, and there are really positive signs happening at the major league level. But that's not all, and not even necessarily the most important thing that's happening. So it can be tough to see when and where progress is happening and how much to read into the competitiveness of the team.
Yeah, because they're doing this despite, Danny, the entire team seemingly having dealt with an injury at some point this year. They're at 500.
It's remarkable.
Maybe it's not the most entertaining product to watch from time to time just because of the fact that they struggle so much at the plate, but somehow, some way, they're at 500 despite having a lineup featuring many hitters batting in the hundreds. But then you think about Kelnick, and it's almost as if Kelnick's more important than anything this year, and you can't help but focus on him, and it overshadows something that was fantastic to see last night. You know, Justice Sheffield is one of those young pitchers for the Mariners that you really wonder about his long-term future here. Is he going to be somebody that they look at as the fourth guy in the rotation when this thing is maybe where they want it to be, if it ever gets there? He struck out Shohei Ohtani three times last night. I mean, that's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, superstars in baseball.
And he's pitching tonight.
I'm more excited about that than I am about watching the actual Mariner lineup itself go up against it. I really want to see Shohei Ohtani pitch. I've never seen it.
He's pretty fun to watch. I mean, just in general. And I love watching him hit, too. He is Vladimir Guerrero's heir is the best bad ball hitter in baseball. He can club it when it's thrown at his shins. He can get it when it's up at his shoulders. All of those different things. But you're right. And Justice Sheffield allows a couple early home runs, really settles down, gets through five innings. You get some solid performance out of the bullpen. By the way, it sounds like the bullpen is about to get some reinforcements. The guys who had been quarantining in San Diego after some of the COVID testing, they're all out of San Diego now. Steckenrider and Kendall Graveman was someone else. Don't have anybody that's left there. Like there's some good signs that you're going to get deeper. You're still missing some pitchers because of the injuries. But you've weathered a pretty hellacious storm of injuries, and you're at 500, which honestly is better than a lot of people projected the team to be, even without the injuries. Like, all of those are really, really positive things. And then you get to the other side of it of like, hey, okay, but you're watching Kelnick and seeing, and last night was the first time that I really felt like, okay, you might need to do something. Like, you might need to move him down to AAA. And even just a day ago, I would have said, give him the whole road trip. They got 10 games on this road trip. He struck out three times, and he was really mad after the last one. Far be it from me. I love guys cursing. I don't care about cursing at all. But he looked pretty high strung, and it was kind of the frustration and just the question of whether or not he's lost right now in his approach. He struck out nine times in the past three games.
One of the things you were concerned about was that if you move Kelnick, maybe that affects the way that things have been going for him, his approach to an extent too. And I think it's fair to believe that could have been the case last night, where it feels like he's pressing. And it's interesting. They made the right decision in the lineup. Give Scott Servais some credit for deciding, you know what? We're going to put J.P. Crawford at the top of the lineup. He had two doubles last night. Crawford's been hitting well. Your top four hitters, that is a competent top four unit that you have in your lineup. But when you have Kelnick at the back of it and the struggles are happening, what do you do? You said the timeline, okay, maybe you expedite it over the course of this road trip. Maybe you sit him down for multiple games? Would that be better than sending him down?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe. maybe a couple days lets him clear his head. The last time he got a day off, he came back and he homered, and then he had multiple hits the next game. But that's really been the... No, that hasn't. That's the only time he's hit. He's gone hitless in 8 straight games.
Ugh.
So my feeling is you want him to play every day. The good news is Jake Fraley is not only continuing to walk at an ungodly... Well, no. The Greek... the Norse god of walks, I believe Ryan Divish dubbed him. The Norse god of walks continues to walk. He clubbed a 3-run homer.
The Greek one.
Like, that's a very, very strong... Like, that's a good sign for you. Ty France has continued to hit the cover off the ball since he's come back from injury. The only times he didn't hit were really what we now know was probably related to a wrist injury. And there's just that two-pronged... And maybe it's because... If the Mariners are going to make trades to improve themselves this season, it should be about spending more money. It should not be about giving up prospects.
Correct.
Like that very clearly, and to state that they are not at a position where I want them to trade anything that they're hoping as a long-term asset for short-term help. If it's a matter of taking on money, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I am too.
It's a matter of
spend.
If it's a matter of don't. I don't want to see like, well, that's not the best place to spend money. If you got an opportunity to spend money that could get you and vault you up a couple places or make you more
why not?
Serious.
Yeah, don't go crazy, but why not? It's not going to hurt you, I would imagine. And honestly, you look at this lineup, there are plenty of places where you could potentially upgrade. I mean, you really only have, I think, 4 spots locked down. By the way, I think a texter correctly points out on the Mac and Jack's Brewing Company text line, Ty France holding his own at first base, I think you leave him there. I think when Evan White comes back, I don't think you put White back in the lineup.
Oh, well, that means you leave him in AAA. Like, you do not want someone sitting. Any of your young players, you don't want them sitting.
Hmm.
If they're not going to be playing every day, and you don't put Evan White at DH. Evan White, the reason that Evan White warrants inclusion in the lineup in any regard at this point is because of his defense. Evan White's... A superior defensive.
Oh, it's great. I don't think
that's the most important thing. Here's the part that's kind of fortunate with White, with the injury, and you're going to send him down for a rehab assignment.
Yeah,
like you're not going to you are going to have him hit in AAA, and until he starts hitting there, it would stand to reason that you're not going to promote him back up. If he gets down there and is not hitting, you're not going to bring him up even if he's fully healthy.
Yeah,
like you get that rehab assignment. Yeah, I think Ty France has looked okay. He's never going to be... I mean, he's not even going to be an average infielder, though, at any of his spots. He's not going to be a major league average infielder. Doesn't matter because he hits so well. His bat deserves a spot in the lineup. But he doesn't field well enough that
Fair
you're
enough.
Like, oh, totally forgot about Evan White's glove. Like, no, Evan White's a great first baseman.
Defensively. We got to say that every single time. So, to circle things back to Kelnick, I think there's a certain point, too, where if he's not performing, it doesn't necessarily send a massive statement to the rest of the clubhouse, but even if there maybe isn't an alternative at outfield given the Kyle Lewis injury, which we found out yesterday from Jerry DePoto, sounds like he's going to be out for a really long period of time. Even if there isn't an alternative, don't you need to go to an alternative? Is it fair when the team is at 500 to say, you know what, yes, development's important this year, but we also need to make players know that if they perform, that they stay in the lineup, and if they don't perform, then they have to take a step back. Kalinic having a night off the first time benefited him. A couple of days off, is that to maybe just clear his head, reset? Is that potentially more valuable than a trip back to AAA?
I don't think so. You want him playing. If you decide he needs extended time off, I think you send him down
okay.
and let him start hitting at a lower level. I don't believe in, because at that point it becomes not a day off, it becomes a benching. It becomes we've made a change here. And you want him playing every day. You want him playing every day. You want all of your young players who are healthy playing every single day. It was why Taylor Trammell was not going to be a fourth outfielder. Like that's a role for a guy, and I don't know if Sam Haggerty is the right guy for that, but Jake Fraley can be your fourth outfielder. If Jake Fraley doesn't get a ton of at-bats or goes 4 days without seeing the plate, I don't really care about that at all.
If Fraley Fraley maybe could make this decision a little bit easier for you. Fraley has played surprisingly well since coming back. If he continues to play well, does that maybe make it a little bit easier to say, all right, Jared, we're going to send you down for a bit?
Not until Dylan Moore and or Evan White are back up. Who's your DH right now?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
So if Fraley's in left field, who's your DH? If you put Fraley in left and have Trammell in center, who's your DH? And I would say that the same goes for any idea until you get somebody back that you want to see hitting in there. You don't have a better option than Kelnick. That said, I don't believe that Kelnick's role in the majors depends upon whether or not you've got Kelnick's trajectory should depend on Kelnick and what you think is best for him. It should be completely exempt. It shouldn't have anything to do with major league results.
I understand that. At the same time, though, I think it's important to not play favorites, and it does sort of feel with the way that you described it that he is under different standards.
Yeah, because he's that good a player.
He is, in principle, that good of a player.
Who are you going to play in front of him right now?
I mean,
that's the thing of if you're
talking about
how... If I
had an option for DH, I would put Fraley in front of him right now. If I had an option for DH.
And then move him down, that's fine. But there's no option for DH. Like, that's the thing of if you're talking about how other players are reading into it and if they're getting resentful or feeling like, hey, why is this guy staying in the lineup? There's not a different, better option. And if anybody was sitting there thinking like, man, I wish Haggerty could get some more time, I'm like, well, I really don't care about your opinion then. Like, if that's what you're thinking is going to make things better, because it's not. Like, Jared Kelnick will end up being a much better player. The question is how to get him there the quickest.
Is bringing Cal Raleigh up, is that potentially something?
And having him DH, don't you want him catching, though?
Can you go back and forth with Tom Murphy?
Well, you actually started to get some decent... Jose Godoy looks good defensively, and Murphy's starting to hit the ball. Like, I wouldn't necessarily... Once Raleigh comes up, I think you want him catching.
Okay.
And I don't know if I feel strong enough about Murphy to have him DHing.
Right now, who do you... That's the sad thing. You're probably going to be putting a guy in who's hitting like 180 into that DH spot, ultimately, if you do make some shakeups.
Or waiting to see what happens when Dylan Moore comes back and how that works out. And you probably don't have Mayfield again, but they've got to start getting healthy first. But I do think that the question of what you do with Kelnick is entirely separate from what the fortunes of the major league team are. It's entirely about what you're seeing from him. One of the texters said, hey, you don't send him down until he starts swinging at bad pitches. Generally, I think that's right. Though 9 strikeouts in 3 games is starting to get a little worrisome. Strikeouts in 3 games. That's you do
sombrero
not
territory.
You do not want to see the strikeouts start to bloom, because you don't want him losing control of the strike zone, and you don't want to see him get frustrated where he's pressing.
Right. And it feels like he's frustrated right now. I mean, again, it's one moment, and that's how competitive he is, so there's that at the very least. He cares about it, but it's getting to the point where if I'm him, I don't really know how I recenter myself. If it's like this every single day and I feel like it's going to be the same result at the ballpark every single day.
See, that's the part. I'm not worried about that part, because he has to learn that. He has to learn that. And that getting out of a slump, Jerry said it to us yesterday, of like, this is probably the worst tear. This is the worst stretch of road that Kelnick's been through in his life. All he's done is clobber the cover off the baseball and been a prodigy. And the reality is, even the best players in baseball, if he was a 5 or a 6 year veteran, we would talk about this as a slump, but it would be a question of when is he going to break out of it, and not does he need to be sent down? Do you need to do something else? Do you need to give him time off? Is he hurt? All of those things would be question marks, as opposed to where we are here is like, don't break him. Don't break him. We need to handle. He needs to know how to get out of this, and he's going to have to learn it. If not, and maybe he needs to learn it in AAA. Like, maybe he does. Maybe you need to ramp down the level of difficulty for him to do it. But he's going to have to stare this demon into the eye, because every good baseball player has to learn how to do this. It is Danny and Gallant. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Thank you, Paul. There's
a pretty funny text that just came in.
Shoot it. Put it in my veins.
From the 509 said, I'm going to be very consistent. I'm going to treat every one of you differently. I kind of like that. I'll be very consistent about this, about treating every one of you differently.
Playing favorites.
Yes. Everyone, you should play favorites. You're an idiot if you don't as a coach.
When you just said, what did you say? He has to look the demon in the eye?
Yes.
Tom Murphy?
I was thinking maybe he could just look in Tom Murphy's eyes and that would get him.
Maybe. Right. I wouldn't advise it, but desperate times call for desperate measures.
All right, guys. First up, NFL.com's Jim Trotter wrote about the three teams that he thinks are poised for a playoff run after missing the playoffs last year. He chose the Chargers, 49ers, and Cardinals. We've kind of debated whether we think they should be more concerned about the Rams or the 49ers in the division next year, the Seahawks. Are we underestimating the Cardinals?
I don't think so. I don't think we are. Because I think they have the shakiest head coach in the entire division.
Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
They got this offseason too.
And they get J.J. Watt. I want to wait and see how that pans out. Because usually when a guy of that caliber gets let go by the previous place he was employed at, he's kind of past his sell-by date.
It's different there because they are pressing the reset button entirely, but I understand what you're saying. They seemed committed to cutting ties with all things old Texans when they came in. Nick Caserio and J.J. Watt did one out. I am curious. I still think he's got something left in the tank. I mean, it was Reggie White was about the same age as him when he left the Eagles to go to the Packers. Definitely not the same kind of injuries on his body. What's interesting about the two teams that Trotter picks, Danny, I feel like those two of those teams, the Chargers and Cardinals, I feel like every single year someone is trying to dub them with the holy, they are our dark horse favorite honor of the offseason. And, I mean, we did it last year with the Cardinals. What's really changed outside of they brought in older players is more brought up. And I would say with the Chargers, too. I mean, Justin Herbert looked good. The rest of that team's got a lot of questions, and I don't think he can bring it all up because he wasn't able to last year despite looking really competent as a rookie.
All right, this is a weird one, guys. Broncos linebacker Von Miller tattooed the name of his unborn son that's due later this summer on his body about 2 months ago. He was going to name him Valor Miller. But the problem is now he's decided that he wants to change that. He wants to name his son Legacy Miller. So now he said he's going to have to figure out a tattoo cover-up, and Valor can maybe be his son's nickname.
Legacy. Oh, my God. That's a terrible name. You should never give your child that legacy going forward of everyone thinking he's going to be a giant you-know-what before they even meet him.
Yeah. The thing that's most important is that Von Miller love and care for his son, right? Like, because I want to make fun. What I can't get past is this is the child whose mother Von Miller was insulting via text messages, right?
Oh.
And, like, there's a really sort of ugly history, I believe, that relates to the conception and Von's reaction to it.
Yeah, he was pretty unhappy with her when she told him.
Yeah.
To put it mildly.
Disgusting what he said. It changed my opinion of him completely, honestly. I used to think a lot differently of him before all that stuff came out.
So the most important thing is that he love and support his child.
Yep.
Like, that's...
Terrible name choice, though.
Laugh at him for getting a tattoo.
Changing the name. Yeah,
it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, you know what? You can't pick the name, tattoo it on you. My dad wanted to name me Beowulf.
What?
That would have been so great.
My dad wanted to name me Beowulf.
Beowulf and Gallant.
Beowulf and Gallant show.
Yeah.
Grendel is attacking the Mariners again.
Yeah, Beowulf is a Celtic legend. Like a warrior, and then one of the in the myth, Cathaoirleach is I believe the Gaelic name for Beowulf. In the myth, the dragon that Beowulf slays is Grendel, and that's what he wanted to name my sister. which we think is responsible for a somewhat friction-filled relationship my dad had with my sister when she was young. Like, when he'd come home from work, she would say, "Oh, no, he's home." And then he would come in and tease her by, like, "Don't look at me, Robin. Robin, don't you look at me." It was very, very funny for everybody except my mom, who didn't enjoy that. But, yeah, I don't think my dad got that tattooed on his body, though.
I'm glad he didn't win out on the name choices. That might
Young Bay. I could see. I could be Young Bay.
Especially when you go through rap lyrics. Young Bay here on the 1 2s and threes. What?
This or that? This or that? Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, we've been talking a lot about OTAs. We heard from Bump earlier that he doesn't think as much gets done there as people think. It's not a big deal that the Seahawks are there. But there were some interesting comments from Patrick Mahomes to reporter Matt McMullen of the Chiefs website. On Thursday, he said, "I think the biggest thing with OTAs is that you get to experiment a little bit more. When you get to training camp, you have to be refined, and you're working on things to get ready for the season against different teams. So that experimentation is a big part of why we came in for OTAs."
Experimenting, man.
Hoo-hoo-hoo!
How much experimenting can Kansas City really do? What is it like? Hey, run faster than you already do. Wide receiver 1, 2, and 3, all of whom run 4.3s.
It'll be interesting to see if Kansas City goes through the lull that Seattle did, right? Because they've had a trajectory and a course that is very similar to what happened with Seattle, where Mahomes' first full year as a starter, they came to the brink. They went further than Seattle did. They got to the conference championship game. They won the Super Bowl in his second full season. Then this last year, they lost the Super Bowl. Yeah. I mean, there's a parallel there. And I think they're going to have a hard time. I think it's going to be harder for them this year to sustain it. And having that buy-in from your quarterback at the beginning might help stop it. But I think they're going to have some real challenges this year.
The good thing for them is that the AFC West is still, I think, a bunch of teams that are clawing at their feet.
Yeah.
To try to even just get up to one knee to potentially be close to them. So at the
Broncos
very least,
Broncos don't have a quarterback.
Right. They have a great defense, but that's it. Chargers.
Chargers drink loser juice on the regular.
They have bad luck. And the Raiders, it's Gruden.
Just soaked in loser juice.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. I definitely could see them having some issues this year. Also, just because of, you know, what you get out of Super Bowl hangovers generally. I mean, they've been essentially right there for the last 3 years. It's hard to do that 4 years in a row, to be top dogs like that.
It's Danny and Gallant. Coming up next, we'll take a look at what Will Dissly says and why Blame It on Shoddy is not being played on this station anymore. That's coming up next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
You've heard it. Heck, I've helped spread it. The shoddy shade. The questions that started as soon as the Seahawks season was over, and the question of, okay, what went wrong with this offense? How did this offense go from being one of the best in franchise history and setting a record, in fact, for points scored, but really the tale of two halves. Yeah. Tale of two halves of this season was final eight games, not nearly as potent. And I think most of us settled on, well, I'm not sure if it's entirely Brian Schottenheimer's fault, but at the very least, he didn't put the players that he has and guys that you're going to be relying on going forward in the best position. So why not change the people that are drawing up the plays and cooking and giving you the recipe?
Yeah, that makes sense to do. But I think that we've gotten to a point this offseason where you're now thinking to yourself, oh, a first-time offensive coordinator is essentially going to be the difference in a team that failed offensively last year getting to the Super Bowl. Because personnel-wise, the big change is you got another guard and you drafted a second-round wide receiver. That's it. It's and a tight end.
Get a tight end. Get a tight end. But yeah, the big difference this year is the offensive coordinator and the new system that's been putting in. And we've now reached a tipping point where we are in the let's pump up the tires on everything associated with this new offense. And I'm just going to say, from here on out, all descriptions of how great this offense is going to be are going to be met with a giant eye roll.
Okay.
And that's nothing against the people that are saying those things. It's just, this is the party line. This is what you would be saying no matter what right now. And the latest came from Will Disley, who was on with Jake and Stacey. And I love Will. Go Dogs. Absolutely love Will. But I'm no longer taking sort of the descriptions of this new offense at face value. Here's what he had to say about what Shane Waldron is putting together.
Shane's a really smart guy. His offense is really systematic and it has a lot of answers. You know, there's going to be some uniqueness. And the cool part about it is we're going to get some tight ends on the field. You know, I think Gerald and I are going to have a great compliment and Colby and whoever else steps up. And we're going to create a lot of problems for defenses around the league. You know, we have a really tough division. And I think Shane's ready. He's come prepared. And Russ is picking it up quick. He's excited. It's just there's a newness. There's a new sense of urgency, a new energy. And we're all excited to learn. And, you know, get on the field and go operate a little bit. So there's high expectations for our offense always, you know, with Russ leading the charge. And, you know, with the crew that we have, I don't see why we wouldn't be just as dominant as we were last year.
So it's a long quote. Danny.
Great. Sounds good. Okay. That's what everybody, it doesn't tell you what's going to happen, right?
No, not at all.
Everybody should be excited and everybody should be optimistic. And we've entered the puffery phase of NFL coverage. And there's nothing wrong with that. You just need to recognize it for what it is.
Every June, every July. Yep.
This is a chance for renewal. Everybody gets to be optimistic and everything is going to be better. Not every coaching change made in the NFL in the offseason will work out for the positive. Yet all the coverage you read over the next 2 months will accentuate only the positives that are inevitable from the coaching changes that have been made.
You're not wrong. And I mean, honestly, the only negative stories that I think we have seen have all involved Urban Meyer this offseason on that front. Listening back to that Will Disley cut, Danny, and putting your old reporter hat back on, if you were to create some sort of aggregation headline that would be strewn across NFL media out of what you just heard from Will Disley, what would that headline read?
Seahawks Wilson, optimistic for bright new era of Seahawks football.
A whole new world.
It's exactly right. It's what it is, right? Yeah. And you get to talk about everything that was, hey, I don't want to say anything bad about the guy that was here before. I don't want to talk about all of, but that's really what it is of like, okay, we've changed and this new thing is going to allow us all to, it is a time for renewal. Like, that's what every June and July and then even into training camp is. And you don't have any evidence. The only thing you have is suspicion or cynicism.
How different is it really going to be? You're right. I mean, I think that we all should probably challenge ourselves right now to be skeptical that things will be all that different. Ultimately, Russell Wilson's the one running the show here. Not being at OTAs, I'm sure he has a pretty good grasp of what the offense is. But I would say more so, maybe doing all this stuff on his own kind of gives him an ability to create and have the Seahawks players know the offense somewhat on his terms, right? I mean, it's sort of his ability. If he wants to give the offense his own spin on it, if he wants that kind of input that maybe he's not getting, I guess this is one way to go about doing it.
Who should be scrutinized more this year? Should it be Waldron or should it be Wilson? This will be the third offensive coordinator that Russell Wilson have. It'll be the second time that they've changed offensive coordinators with the idea that somebody can get more out of him. That somebody else and having a different voice. With Schottenheimer, it was, we're gonna consolidate. We're not going to have Tom Cable calling the run game and Daryl Bevel calling the passing game, but Cable's still doing the protection. Now it was one voice, and now it's, okay, we're going to go with not super thrilled about the offense's inability to adjust to the way defense is defended. Who's going to have or who should have more scrutiny on him?
It really depends on how you, I guess, weigh the idea of expectations into scrutiny. Because if you feel like, look, Russ has been given things that he wants and he's a great quarterback, and yet then the scrutiny should be on Russ. Where with Shane Waldron, what are the expectations? I would doubt for many that they're big. So I would say between the two, the scrutiny goes on the person with more expectations attached to them. That means Russell Wilson.
It's Wilson. It's Wilson, not just because he's been here this long and because however you want to talk about the legacy of success and never having a losing record, he's won one playoff game. He's won one playoff game over the previous four seasons. And the other reason the scrutiny is on him is because he expressed frustration. This is as loud as he's ever been. This is as critical as he's ever been of his employer. There should be more scrutiny on Russell Wilson this year.
Yeah. And I feel like, for the most part, he's going to be able, early on this coming season, to live up to it. I just wonder the second half of the year.
Like that's, yeah.
That's where all that's my more skepticism important. Comes.
You know what? That's the most important. It's more important that he's better in the second half than in the first half. It is more important that he's better in the second half of the season than he is in the first half. I'm not going to say I don't care about the start, but I care way more about how he finishes than about how he starts this year. I care way more. It is Danny and Gallant. It's going to be time for us to raise flags. That's coming up next.
From the pocket and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Somebody wants to throw a flag on both Von Miller and my padre. I can understand why. Von Miller's son is going to be named Legacy, which creates a situation where he's going to have to cover up a tattoo on his body that says Valor.
Does he have to cover it up, though? I mean, some guys, you just say, oh, yeah, I just got that tattoo, and I'm all about Valor.
Well, he said he might just make it his son's nickname. So he'll be Legacy, but then go by Valor.
Legacy.
Your kid's got to live with that name his whole life, though, right?
Yes, he does.
My dad wanted to name me Beowulf, and I think he was mostly joking, but not entirely joking.
There's a
Cam Newton's son is named Chosen.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Russell Wilson with Win.
Oh.
Yeah?
I mean, I guess, you know what? It's outside the box. It's different. It's not repetitive. I mean, Paul's pretty boring. Paul is like a lot of other Pauls. I wish I was named Maurice. That's my middle name. After my grandfather.
Some people call me Maurice.
Yeah, and my mom instead named me after Paul McCartney. And I don't really like the Beatles, so...
What about wings? Have you tried out wings?
Yeah, wings are tasty.
No, wings.
Barbecue
with Paul
wings.
McCartney.
I've listened to, I think, a couple of their songs.
Yeah,
don't
wings
they do,
is great.
Don't they do Somebody's Knocking at the Door?
I'm unfamiliar with their entire catalog.
The song Somebody's Knocking at the Door is one of my least favorite songs in the world. My dad used to play it to troll me, and I don't ever want to hear it again. Thanks, Paul McCartney. You ruined my life!
I am throwing a flag on the NFL, and this regards a standard that they were using in their concussion settlement, which has been referred to, if you've seen the news stories, race norming. They were using a different baseline expectation of cognitive ability for black players compared to white players, and if that sounds racist, it's because it is. To assume that made it de facto harder for former players who were black to prove that they were suffering from cognitive defects from playing football. If you start out with the assumption that their cognitive ability was lower, their tests have to be lower. A white player could test at a certain level and be granted financial compensation for those injuries, and if a black player tested at that same level, would not be because of the standards that were used, and it was based on like early 90s research. It's gross. And the NFL has said it would stop using it. I have a lot of questions about how that was agreed to.
Yeah.
In the implementation, and why the attorneys who were filing these class action suits would allow that to be used. The judge in the case has now said that lawyers for the former players who are black will be allowed to speak on behalf of them as part of these class action suits, because clearly no one was advocating for their interests. Clearly, to accept that, and it's really galling. There's no other way to say it. And the NFL can say all at once now, if we're going to stop doing this and we shouldn't have been doing it and all of that. The fact is, you did it. And you did it because there was a financial advantage to you, because it would reduce the overall number of claims. That's the reason you did it. And it's gross. And all of the stuff that you say about how much you care for the former players and all of that other sort of thing is completely undermined by the fact that you would use two different standards based entirely on race. with the assumption that the baseline cognitive abilities of your former players who were black were lower than their white counterparts.
Obviously, you have lawyers who are going to look for every single way that they can perhaps minimize the kind of payment that's going to be needed, that needs to be made. That's not to justify the lawyer who wrote that thing up doing his job. My issue is, how did nobody say this is wrong?
That's the bigger problem, I think. There had to have been quite a number of people that knew that this was being practiced and just decided to look the other way.
Exactly, Maura. I mean, maybe they didn't read the entirety of what they were signing up for, which is bad. At least that would be not done out of malice, but out of negligence. This, to me, is cowardice. I mean, you see something like that, and you don't say anything about it. You don't find anything wrong with it. You don't think, and forget the morality side of it. You don't think this is going to come to bite you later?
Yeah. So anyway, giant flag thrown on them.
Totally merited.
Paul, your flag.
I'm going to throw a flag. And I know that people are going to probably look at me and think that with the way that I've been talking about this guy, that I am just zagging. Every single Urban Meyer headline that we have seen this offseason screams that this is not going to work out. And yet, I find it interesting, Danny, that everyone seems to think this isn't going to work. When of all of the coaches who were hired this offseason, I look at him as the most qualified. I mean, I get it. College versus the NFL. But he's the most qualified, and he's getting to work with the number one overall pick, Trevor Lawrence, who is probably a can't-miss prospect, or at least very close to one. Sure, it could blow up. The DJ Chark story, I look at it, it's an awful look for Urban Meyer. It's petty, small-minded. The Tim Tebow thing, no matter what he says to minimize it, it doesn't look great either. But even with all of that said, I just feel that right now people don't want him to succeed. And I feel like that is maybe clouding their honest assessment of football-wise what this probably will end up being. He has succeeded everywhere. Not just at Florida, not just at Ohio State. We're talking Bowling Green. We're talking Utah as well. This guy makes it happen. You know, I thought you might not like him. Personally, I don't particularly like him. But I do think that we have perhaps gotten to a point where we just can't see that he is still, despite being completely unlikable, one of the better football minds that we've seen over the last 20 years.
I'm going to enjoy watching him flame out and fail in the NFL if that's how it goes.
Not off to a great start. I will agree with people on that, but
when 2 years from now he's exhausted and says he can't carry on and has to quit, I'm going to cackle because it's always great to be right. It always feels
his next
really
Coach
good.
K.
It always feels really good to be right. Maura, what do you got?
I am going to raise a flag for Greg Olsen and his son TJ. He posted recently about TJ was
great
born
flag.
With a congenital heart defect that required 4 surgeries. He's had 3 open heart procedures and a pacemaker. And recently Olsen tweeted that he was coming to the end of his journey with that heart. Basically, he needed a transplant. And today he announced that the day they prayed for has arrived. They found a donor match and TJ will get a new heart. So he has a long road ahead of him. They're asking for thoughts and prayers still, but that's really good news.
It's great news. And that's a great way to end the show.
Yes.
Like, best thoughts going out to Greg Olsen, to his family, and to his son.
Absolutely.
And that is great and inspiring, and we hope we know that TJ and Greg has said TJ's been a fighter his entire life, and he's going to get a chance to keep fighting, and that is really, really great news.
Go, TJ.
Thank you to Michael Bumpus and to John Clayton for joining us this morning. Maura Dooley, who puts the bright side on the show, keeps us in line and points out when we're using surfer talk to describe hockey, which makes no sense. And he is Paul, not Maurice. Paul, not Maurice Gallant, and he'll be taking you through the next hour in the Paul Gallant Show.
And that was Beowulf O'Neal, and you will hear him Monday at 7 o'clock. Good luck with Grendel this weekend. So long, farewell. And up next, a question. Would it be a failure for the Mariners to send Jared Kelenic back to the minors at any point the rest of the season? We'll talk about that next.